Good morning. So if you weren't here yesterday at Bill's 100th birthday party, you missed on declaration of the governor of Missouri. Today is Bill White Day. So if you see him, don't say happy birthday. Say, hey, happy you day, right? Today is your day. Pretty exciting, pretty incredible. So make sure you wish Bill a happy birthday and a happy him day. I hope to live to see Justin Hatfield Day someday, but I don't know if that'll ever happen. Today we are in part two of a three-part series that we are calling Let God Arise, of course based on the song that we just sung. I hope that you have joined me this past week in praying that God would arise. What do we mean when we pray, let God arise? Well, our hope is that He would arise in our lives. When the Israelites used this phrase, it was in reference to the Ark of the Covenant from Numbers chapter 11, as they would lift the Ark up before the people of God to lead them through the wilderness from Sinai to what would eventually be Jerusalem and the resting place. And the ark would go before the people and show them the way and provide protection against all the armies and the threats to God's people during that time. And so they would cry for God to rise up, to show them, to protect them, and to help them. We want nothing less for us today, for God to arise in the life of His people, in the life of His church, showing us who we need to be and where we need to go. We have been thinking about the good news. We have been thinking about how we want God to rise up in our lives to help remind us of who He is, what He has done for us, and how we might share that with other people. And last week we talked about our God is a God who saves. Our God is a God of second chances, who provides protection and a way for His people to know Him. Hopefully you've been thinking about people in your own life who need to hear about our God who saves. That is good news indeed. This morning, we are going to look at Psalms 93 through 99. I mentioned on Wednesday, these are Psalms known as enthronement Psalms, and they give us one more piece of the good news that we have to share, a way in which God can rise up in our own lives. And when you read these Psalms, you'll notice a certain level of expressiveness. I want to take just a minute this morning, and I want to do a brief personality test with you. This isn't like the Enneagram or Myers-Briggs. It's none of those kinds of things. It's a very simple one that I pretty much just made up right now. I call it the expressiveness test. Level one are what I've referred to as the woo people. Do you know these people? The woohoo! They're constantly excited. If they come into a party like Bill White's party or an event, you know that they have arrived because you can just hear it. They wear their excitement on the outside. And their laughter is contagious. Their voices are contagious. Who's number one? Anybody a number one in here? A woohoo person? How many of you are wanting to raise the hand of a person next to you? Of course, if you're a true woohoo, you'd be like, woohoo, that's me, you know. So level number two, which apparently seems like most of us are, level two is more like, it's like the Matt Keeners of the world. They just kind of slide in. It's quiet, calm. Something good happens, like, that's very funny. Ha 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 ha. I like that. That's very neat. You know, this is very, very cool level of expressiveness, you know, very low. Anybody who's in the two category? Anybody in the two category? Okay, we're just not participating this morning. That's fine. Most of you then must be the number three. The number three is like, so you remember when you were a kid and your parents would punish you by making you go to your room and not talk to anyone and just read a book? For the number three people, that's like your heaven. You know, that punishment was your vacation. That was like all you ever really wanted to do. They would be the people not even showing up to the party. How many of you are in the third category of expressiveness? If you raise your hand, that means you're not, because you would be like, I ain't doing it. These are the people that wouldn't even want to be at the party. So the Psalms that we are going to look at are the kind of thing that would cause every person in every category to rise up, to exclaim with joy. Because the good news that they have to share is this: our God reigns. Our God reigns. And that is a news that is worthy of sharing. It is the news worthy of causing us to burst forth with joy and to shout and to tell the world that we believe in a God who not only saves, who wants to rise up and heal the broken and the poor in spirit and give life and worth and meaning to everyone, but he is also the God who is in charge. He rules. What do we mean when we use this phrase, our God reigns? There are two different directions that we can go, and we're actually going to talk about both of them. We're going to talk about one next week and one this week. When we say our God reigns, today what we are wanting to think about is that God is the ruler of his creation. He is in charge of where all of this is going. He has a plan for humanity and for the world that he has created. Psalm 93 through 99 express our God reigns over and over and over again and what it means. These psalms were known as the enthronement psalms. There are others, but this is a series specifically selected and put right here in this spot in Psalms for a reason. Some scholars believe that the enthronement psalms were used every year at the new festival as a way for Israel to annually enthrone God, saying to the world and to themselves, God is the one who reigns. Others believe that they were used more regularly in the everyday worship and life of his people. But whatever you think about that, what is commonly known and accepted is that these psalms were written for a very specific reason and in response to something. And we find them here in the book of Psalms in response to an event, a particular event in the life of Israel. But I want to come back to that at the end about why these psalms were written. But what I want to start with is to think about the tone. I've already mentioned that these are psalms that should get everyone on their feet. I want you to listen to the tone of these psalms. In Psalm 93, the Lord reigns. He is robed in majesty, mightier than the thunders of the waters. Psalm 95, come, let us sing to the Lord. Let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation. Let us come to his presence with thanksgiving, making a joyful noise to him with songs of praise. Let us worship and bow down. Psalm 96, sing to the Lord a new song. Sing to the Lord, declare his glory, for he is great. Worship and ascribe to him. Let all of the heavens and all of the earth be glad. Psalm 97, the Lord reigns. Let the earth rejoice. Verse 6, the heavens proclaim his righteousness and the people see his glory. Psalm 98, sing to the Lord a new song. He has done marvelous things. And look at verse 4. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Break forth into joyous song and sing praises. Psalm 99, the Lord reigns. Exalt him and worship at his feet. Do you get a picture of what the psalmist imagines the response of the people to be to the news that God reigns? It is not contained. It is not restrained. It is a bursting forth. It is an uncontainable feeling to truly know and believe and claim that our God reigns. When's the last time you remember feeling something that caused you to just burst forth with that kind of joy? Or have you? I know 100% that some of you have, because I have witnessed it with my own eyes. When, at the end of a game several weeks ago, the Chiefs were victorious. How many of you can attest to the fact that people in your home burst forth with joyous noises? I've never seen Josh move so fast or jump so high as when the final minute clicked away. And before that, there was a, could be any, no, they're not going to do it, they're not going to do it, they're just going to blow it. And like, no, they're not. They're Andy Reid Mahomes. They're not going to blow it. You know what I'm talking about. The feeling that is so great within you that it just naturally finds an outward expression. That is what these psalms envision. To understand that our God reigns means that we cannot contain our joy about that fact. It bursts out of us, and we can't hold it in. So why is that? Why does the fact that our God reigns cause so much joy in God's people? It's because of the claims that these psalms are making about his reign and his character. What does it mean that God reigns? First, it means that he is sovereign. that it is his right to rule because he has created all things. Look at Psalm 93, 1 and 2. He is robed in majesty. He has put strength on as his belt. The world is established and it shall not be moved. Your throne is established from of old. You are from everlasting. Psalm 95, 4 and 6 through 6. In his hands are the depths of the earth. The heights and the mountains are his. The sea is his because he made it. His hands formed dry land. And so let us come and worship and bow down and kneel before the Lord our Maker. God is sovereign. What that means is he has the right to rule because he has created all things. For God to reign means that he is also king. It is his right to rule and to judge his creation. And the psalmists declare that, aren't we so glad that he does? Because we could put ourselves under the judgment of so many things, but what are we going to face? Yet with God, we know what his reign and his rule is going to look like. 96:13, for he comes, and he comes to judge the earth, but he will judge in righteousness and his people with faithfulness. Look at Psalm 97, verse 2, and then 10 through 11. Clouds and thick darkness are all around him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. O you who love the Lord, hate evil. He preserves the lives of his saints, delivers them from the hand of the wicked. Light is sown for the righteous and joy for the upright in heart. 98:9, before the Lord he comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world with righteousness and the people with equity or fairness. God is sovereign. It is his right to rule over all creation, to be in charge. And because he rules and is in charge, it means that he is the king, the one who has the right to judge. But we have no fear because he does so in fairness and in equity. To say that our God reigns also means that God is, has been, and forever will be the one who has the power to create victory for his people. To subdue any other force, to rise above, to be worthy of all our allegiance more than anything else that we could possibly pay attention to or give ourselves over to. Notice 93:2-4. We talked about the imagery of water in the ancient world before. Notice what he says. Your throne is established. You are from everlasting. The floods have lifted up. The floods have lifted their voice. The floods lift their roaring. Mightier, though, than the thunders of many waters. Mightier than the waves of the sea is the Lord who is on high, and he is mighty. In the ancient world, the Canaanite gods were represented by the roaring of the waters and the thundering of the sea, and the psalmists declare that the God who reigns is one who is mightier than any other. In 95, in verse 3, the Lord is a great God, and he is a great king above any other god. 96:4-6, for great is the Lord and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared or revered or honored above all gods. For any other god of the people are worthless, but the Lord has made the heavens. Splendor and majesty are before him, and strength and beauty in his sanctuary. Psalm 97 is almost exclusively about God's power, his might, and his superiority. Psalm 99 speaks of God's justice and his established fairness. When we say our God reigns, we say we serve a God who has defeated all others, who has risen above, who is the only one worthy of our attention, of our respect. He is the only one that we ought to give our loyalty and our allegiance to. And aren't we glad about that? Because these psalmists also declare that our God who reigns, his reign and his rule is defined by his character. He is majestic and strong, mighty, but also trustworthy. He is great and glorious and faithful and true. He is holy, steadfast. He cares for his people, preserving and guiding them, and he is loving and forgiving. Not only on one hand is the God who reigns in our lives the ruler, the creator, the one who has the right to judge all things, the one who has the power over everything else in our lives, but he is also one who judges with fairness and with love and with forgiveness. He is also the God who saves his people. When you take all of these Psalms together, it is quite overwhelming. What else is there to say about our God who reigns? When you read these Psalms and the picture it paints, it also brings a challenge to think about our God who reigns and all that that means, all that the psalmists proclaim, and all the ways in which the Psalms ask us to break forth into joy about the fact of his ruling. It takes courage. It takes faith to make that claim, because on one hand, it means that to claim that is to deny that anything else in our life has the right to rule. Any ideology, any affiliation, any nationality, nothing else has a claim on us as God does. He is the only one who has the right to rule and reign in our lives. But the second is that it's a claim that we often make in the face of circumstances that seem to deny it. Because it's likely this morning that there are some people in this room who are sitting listening to these Psalms proclaim about God's might and his power and his fairness and his greatness and that he rules over all things. And your life experience, maybe what you're experiencing right now, seems to deny that. Because life is hard and it's difficult and you've faced challenges and you've experienced loss. And you may think to yourself, that seems all well and good for the psalmists to pray those things and to sing those things. It seems all well and good for them to say everything that they are saying, but what about the way I've lived? What about what has happened to me in my life? And it's just a little difficult for me to sing that song. Well, my response would be that it is precisely the reason we need to sing these songs. The experiences that you are going through, the ones that you've had, the ones that I have, are the very reason I must sing about our God who reigns. And now it's time to come back and revisit why these Psalms were written to begin with. These Psalms were written and placed in the Psalms in a very specific order for a reason. If you flip over and look at Psalm 89, beginning in verse 38, you'll read, "But now, God, you have cast off and rejected. You are full of wrath and anger against your anointed. You have renounced the covenant with your servant and defiled his crown in the dust." And it goes on and on and on. You see, these psalms were written in response to the exile. These psalms of joy, these psalms that praise our God who reigns, were written by a people who had been carried off into captivity by the Babylonians. These psalms were written by a group of people who had been removed from everything they had ever known that had given them hope, from their connection to God, from their families, from their homes, who had lost so much, yet they were able to sing, "Our God reigns, so let us sing and make a joyful noise." It is precisely in our most difficult times of life that we must sing, "Our God reigns." How is it that they could sing these songs? How is it that in the midst of their exile, they can proclaim the Lord reigns? I want you to pay attention, close attention to Psalm 98, 1 through 4. "Sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things." Remember the time in life in which this is written. "His right hand and his holy arm have worked salvation for him. The Lord has made known his salvation, and he has revealed his righteousness in the sight of the nations. He has remembered his steadfast love and faithfulness to the house of Israel. All the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Break forth into joyous song and sing praises." That was written in the midst of one of the most difficult times in the life of Israel. How is it they can sing with such hope? It's because they have the words of Isaiah. I want you to stay there in Psalm 98 as I read to you from Isaiah chapter 52. Continue looking there at Psalm 98. The psalmist declares in hope what the prophet Isaiah foresaw. Isaiah was written in a time before the exile. He wrote to warn Israel that if they didn't change their ways, if they didn't proclaim our God reigns and actually live in a way that showed God was reigning in their lives instead of the ways they were rebelling, that great calamity would befall them. But even as he was doing that, he was also writing a message of hope that it wouldn't always be that way because our God reigns. And in the second half of Isaiah, he writes a message of hope about where God is taking all of this. And these are the words that the Israelites had to hold on to. Beginning in Isaiah 52, verse 9, but continue paying attention to the Psalms there. Break forth into singing, you waste places of Jerusalem, for the Lord has comforted his people. He has redeemed Jerusalem. The Lord has bared his holy arm before all the eyes of the nations, and all the ends of the earth will see the salvation of our God. It sounds familiar, doesn't it? Almost as though the Psalms are declaring these very words as a reminder of what God has promised and what Isaiah foresaw. Behold, my servant will act wisely. He shall be high and lifted up and be exalted. As many were astonished at you, his appearance was so marred, beyond human semblance, and his form beyond that of the children of mankind. So shall he sprinkle many nations. Kings shall shut their mouths because of him. For that which has not been told them they see, and that which they have not heard they understand. Who has believed what he has heard from us? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? For he grew up before him like a young plant, a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him, no beauty that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, and as one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our grief and carried our sorrow, yet we esteemed him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgression. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds we are healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray. We have turned every one to his own way, and the Lord has laid our iniquity, all of our iniquity, upon him. He was oppressed, and he was afflicted, but he opened not his mouth. Like a lamb led to the slaughter, like a sheep before the shearers, he did not open his mouth. By oppression and judgment he was taken away. And as for his generation, who considered that he was cut off out of the land of the living, stricken for the transgression of my people? And they made his grave with the wicked and a rich man in his death, although he has done no violence and no deceit was in him. Yet it was the will of the Lord to crush him and he has put him to grief. When his soul makes an offering for guilt, he shall see his offspring. He shall prolong his days. The will of the Lord will prosper in his hand. Out of the anguish of his soul, he shall see and be satisfied. And by his knowledge shall the righteous one, my servant, make many to be counted as righteous, because he bears their iniquity. That is why, in the midst of the darkest days of Israel's life, they could sing with hope. That is the promise they had. And here we are today in a world, no matter what our circumstances might be, no matter how we may feel about how life is going, we are in the position of not only declaring in hope, but reporting on the good news that has happened. And what gives us hope? Because God reigns now and forever. What the psalmist declared, what Isaiah foresaw, has now come to pass, and we, the people of his pasture, can claim in hope, no matter what circumstances we may face, that our God reigns. For us to say that our God reigns means we believe that this world is in his hands. all the things that this world holds, all the things that may, can, and will happen cannot change the fact that He is in charge and He has a plan for His creation and where all of this is going. And all we have to do is hold on. As Jesus said to His disciples in Matthew chapter 24, the one who endures to the end will be saved, and who continues to proclaim and spread the message of His kingdom. Jesus said in John chapter 10, the sheep hear My voice, and I know them, and they follow Me, and I give them eternal life, and they will never perish. No one will snatch them out of My hand. My Father who has given them to Me is greater than all, and no one can snatch them out of My hand. And that is why we sing with hope, our God reigns. Our God reigns is a statement of faith. A statement of faith about who we put our hope in, who we trust in. It's a statement about who we know God is, believe Him to be, and about what He is doing with this world, about where all of this is going. Next, our God reigns is a claim about me, and about you specifically. To say our God reigns means that I am denying any other rule of my life. And I want to invite you to join me in praying that prayer this week as we move towards next week and thinking about what that means. Pray that God will reign in your life, that you will give Him the keys to your life. But as we close this morning, I again want to return to our prayer that God might rise up. That the God who reigns, the God who saves, the God who is ruler over all creation, who has a plan for where all of this is going, who is in charge and holds creation in His hand, may He arise in your life. May He rise up in this church and lead us into a deeper relationship with Him, giving us hope for tomorrow. And if that isn't the kind of good news that gets you bursting forth with joy into song, I don't know what is. This morning we offer you a chance to respond to that good news, whether it's in getting your life back where it needs to be, or giving your life to Him for the first time, putting Him on in baptism and receiving forgiveness of your sins. We invite you to join us in praying that God may rise up, and praying that He might reign in you.